Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter, 1 hour of Giants talk. Paul Dottino, John Schmelk, will be joined by Art Stapleton of The Record. He covers the Giants for them at 10 after the hour. And Paul, a weekend to kind of recoup. We haven't heard from you since the Giants' array of press conferences on Friday. Any further thoughts after having a long weekend to kind of think about Ben McAdoo is the new head coach of the NYG?
Well, you know, I think that given the events that transpired a couple of weeks ago when Tom Coughlin resigned and took himself out of the mix, as the Giants looked through all of the candidates, and they were all worthy on their own merit, there's no question every single one of the guys had something to bring to the table. The one thing that kept coming back time after time after time after time was the whole consistency factor with having Ben McAdoo here for Eli Manning in this offense, which is, quite honestly, the one thing that you could say unequivocally has worked extremely well the last 2 years. Despite what the record is, the passing stats of Eli Manning have indisputably been among the best that you could ask for.
Yeah, two of the best 4 years of his career have come in the last two seasons.
So when you consider that, I don't think there's much debate that, you know, that was the nugget or the nail on the wall that the Giants were going to hang this decision on.
Now, John Mara was pretty careful to say on Friday that he felt that was a little bit overrated by the media, having Eli stay in the same offense, that he really had all the faith in the world that if asked to, he would be able to adjust to something new. And the reason they chose Ben McAdoo is because not the offense having continuity, though that was a part of it. More importantly, they just thought he was the right man to be the head coach of this team for years and years to come.
Understood. There always has to be that one nail, though, in the wall that you hang it on. And I don't think that anyone would dispute what the production of the offense was. I mean, if there's, you know, areas that you're going to feel good about with the team and areas you're not going to feel good about with the team, clearly Eli and his arm and his passing attack is going to be something you're going to feel good about. So I'm sure that that was a starting point. Now, Ben McAdoo could have gone into the interview and not done well. And you know what? That nail in the wall wouldn't have been good enough to hold it up. So he had to. I'm sure that that's where it started. But he had to then give them a plan, give them a framework, if you will, for what he thought this team should be, for guys he would want to be here, whether it be coaches, players, style of play, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if the rest of that stuff didn't fall in line, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that they would have moved on. They would have said, well, wait a minute, Ben, this isn't what we're thinking. You know, just because you and Eli are getting along, the rest of this isn't jiving.
And John Mara was asked at one point, and I thought it was interesting, about whether or not Ben McAdoo's age gave him some pause
right in
making this decision. And he said not necessarily the age. What gave him pause was that he was only 2 years in as an offensive coordinator. And John Mara actually said that in an ideal world, he would have been a coordinator for two or three more years.
Sure.
To have that extra experience. But he said the way he interviewed and the maturity he showed and the fact that, and he pointed this out and was quite honest about it, that the Eagles' interest in a second interview kind of accelerated things here, that they felt this was the best time to hand the reins over to Ben McAdoo and that he would learn the rest kind of on the go.
Well, there's one thing for sure. As the Giants look to move forward, they've got some more evaluating to do with their roster. They've got some more evaluating to do in terms of the coaching staff, which is still not settled yet. You know, once this stuff is complete, and I would anticipate at least the coaching stuff is going to happen within the next week or so. I can't think it's going to go much longer than that. I mean, heck, there's a chance maybe that somebody on one of the staffs that's still active is still under consideration. We don't know the answer to that. That's possible. But I would think they'd want to get their staff in place before the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you would think, and you know, generally speaking, you don't have much self-imposed coaching changes on teams that get to the AFC and NFC Championship game because things are going well.
Yeah.
Those teams aren't exactly going to let people go. Why? You just got to the AFC or NFC championship.
Nor are they looking to leave.
No, exactly. So, you're right. I would imagine they'll try to fill these spots as quickly as possible. But at the same time, look, there aren't a lot of, you know, great coaches just walking on the street trying to find a job here. So, you have to, you know, do a lot of homework and do a lot of searching and do your due diligence to find the best guys that you think are suited for position coaches that aren't really talked about enough in the media and by fans, but are really important when it comes to developing players that come onto your roster. You know, you talk about player development, and yeah, the head coach, his face is on it, I get that. But the head coach isn't the person teaching these guys. He'll stop by, he'll supervise, he'll tell the assistant coach what to do. Mm-hmm. But the guys that's teaching these young players how to play in the NFL, how to transition to the NFL,
yep,
those are the position coaches. In one-on-one drills and practice and teaching them the mental part of the game in the meeting room, that really is the bigger part of young player development.
And the Giants, because of the turnover in their roster over the last couple of years and continued churn of the roster this year, they will have a lot of young developmental players that need to be worked with. I think all you need to do, if you don't understand what John's talking about, look at the Giants Super Bowl teams and look at the coaching staffs of those teams. It wasn't just Bill Parcells and Tom Coughlin who won those trophies. You're 1,000% right, John. And it's not just the coordinators who were calling the plays either. It's all those positional coaches. I mean, I'll give you a great example. All right, Mike Waffle was an outstanding defensive line coach. Got the most out of Michael, got the most out of OC, you know, got the most out of a bunch of those defensive linemen. And those kinds of guys, okay, just to name a name, those kinds of guys in those Super Bowl years maximize the production out of each one of their units.
Did Waffle have JPP for a year? Did he have his rookie year?
I don't think he did. I'd have to go back and look at that.
I'm not sure. I know Nunn had him the year he had his big sack year.
Yes.
In his second year. I don't remember who had him his rookie year. I'll have to check that.
Mike had Tuck. He had OC.
Every year of his career, Nunn was with JPP? Okay.
Yeah. But Waffle had Strahan. He had OC. He had Tuck.
Yeah, of course.
He had all of those guys. Yes. You know? And so what happens is, you know, when you look at the position coaches and you say, okay, did they maximize what you got out of that position? And those staffs in those Super Bowl years, it's no coincidence that they get the most out of each one of the levels of the offense and of the defense. So it's very important. These moves, folks, these staff moves that are going to be happening over the course of the next week or so are very, very important. I mean, everybody wants to talk about the free agents who sign. These are a big deal, too.
And I should note that the Giants have not made any announcements in terms of assistant coaches yet. The only thing we've heard was last week. It's a fluid situation. And as soon as they have something, I'm sure they'll announce it. So we'll have that for you on Giants.com.
Coach McAdoo apparently is on Sirius as we speak and is being quoted on Sirius as saying not releasing any names on the coaching staff yet. We are comfortable with interviewing a bunch of different guys.
So says the coach. Out. There you go. And that about sums it up, doesn't it? All right, we're going to have Art Stapleton in 2 minutes. But first, Russell's calling all the way from Alaska. I want to make sure we get him off that phone before the signal breaks, before he has to wait for Art to go for his 10-15 minutes. So, Russ, you get to lead us off today before we hear from Art Stapleton.
Wait, what's up, Russ?
Time
out. How cold is it in Alaska?
It's 4 degrees outside. So it's not that cold. It's like hit -15, but it's a dry cold. Like, New York got a wet cold when the wind is blowing.
Yeah.
Dry cold. You don't feel it.
Yeah, we're looking at like 21 with a wind chill of 8, and we're not having a good time.
Yeah, see out here, it's like, it's just dry. It's just cold. And you don't feel no wind going on.
All right. I'm all for it.
Negative 40 out here, you wouldn't even feel it. You're like, oh, my God.
May I add to you, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to delay you, but may I add to all of you folks out there who are in the New York area who are freezing and really not liking this? I got to be honest. I was on the field in Minnesota for the whole second half of that game. It was 11 degrees, and it was not bad at all. I enjoyed myself on that field. That was not cold.
So why weren't you down there for the first half then?
This is cold. Well, because there was room upstairs, and I figured I might as well enjoy the room while I had it. Or the heat while I had it. But then I went down at halftime, and that did not bother me at all. 11 degrees in Gopher Stadium did not bother me. This bothers me. But okay, Russell.
All right, Russell,
sorry to
what
waste
do you got?
Your time.
All right, yeah. The Ben McAdoo hiring, I think that was very about time, Jerry. About time. That was smart. I see greatness in this guy. I don't know what it is. The offense, Eli has played better. And I just see greatness in him. And a lot of people, like on Facebook, it's a Giants fan on Facebook. They're talking about Ben McAdoo, change Spags. And I'm like, you can't change everything. You know what I'm saying? We can't just – we just changed coordinator last year. We can't change our defensive coordinator again. You got to keep the same personnel and keep it rolling. Now it's about getting talent. And the one thing I've been seeing from the Carolina Panthers and the Patriots, they have something that the Giants do have, but he's developing. The Giants need a tight end. And for some reason, you see the Patriots, Bronk, you see Carolina, Olsen. That tight end is a safety point for Eli, and we don't have a guaranteed starting tight end. Yeah, Danelle is cool, but he's not a Pro Bowl tight end. We need to get a tight end this year. We need a star tight end, some defensive ends. But the Ben McAdoo, smart hiring. I'm liking him. I think the next couple of years we got a good coach by our side.
Your number one priority is tight end. Are you sure?
No, offensive line.
Oh, okay.
You know me. We talk about offensive line all the time. O-line.
I'm just checking, Russell.
We do need a tight end. We do need a blocking tight end.
I'm with O-line. You on that.
When Russell, in fairness, you might want to think about the defensive side of the ball, too. Just saying.
But if you got a good O-line, that's what I said last year. If we had a good O-line, it keeps the defense fresh. If your O-line sucks and they rushing Eli, you seen that one game when they played the Giants. They were rushing Eli. He was nothing he could do. If you got a good O-line, it protects the defense. You have a safe defense. Your O-line sucks, that's it. They're going to just keep
I hear you.
Eli.
It's all about the trenches, Russell. It's all about the trenches. I totally agree with you.
Thank you, Russ.
All right.
Appreciate the call, man. 201-939-4513. We'll get back to your calls in about 10 or 15 minutes. Fans, don't forget that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Back to the phones. Let's say hello to our good friend Art Stapleton. He covers the Giants for the Record. He joins us right now on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Art, hope you had a good weekend. How's everything going?
What's going on, fellas? I'm doing well.
Hey, Art.
Season is moving along.
Yes, it is. And obviously right now, Ben McAdoo in the Giants front office hard at work. Trying to fill out this coaching staff. Apparently the head coach was just on Sirius XM, said they're not ready to announce any hires yet in terms of the staff. What are you hearing in terms of overall strategy and how Ben McAdoo is trying to fill out the staff, Art?
Well, I think you guys, hearing what you and Paul talked about in your open just before you brought me on, not with our friend from Alaska, but before that, hitting on the idea that assistant coaches are involved in player development a heck of a lot more than the average person would admit. And I've been talking about that the last couple of weeks with certain people, and I haven't really gone out and written stories yet. But if you think about it this way, all of the attention that's been on Jerry Reese for the players that the Giants have brought in, and it's fair about what they've been able to bring in for the draft. But it's a chicken and egg thing for me, is that do you blame the drafts, or does the blame also rest with the assistant coaches who are not necessarily developing these players and taking them from point A to point B and then from point B to point C? And I think the Giants have come up empty on both sides. So to answer your question, I think when he's putting together this staff, he's got to find guys who want to teach. We heard that about McAdoo last week. He's a teacher. He's going to break guys down and build them back up. Everything that he did with Eli as a quarterback, I think that was really noticeable to ownership, and I think that is certainly part of the makeup of what they want the Ben McAdoo Giants to be. And it's not a knock on Tom Coughlin and his staff, but I definitely think that that's a change that this team needs moving forward. Break these players down and kind of develop them from what they are when they walk in the building.
Hey, let me ask you something about Coach McAdoo, Art, because, you know, we got a chance to listen to him every Thursday when the coordinators were allowed to talk here with the Giants. And basically, for the most part, that's about 90% of the exposure that we've all had to him, other than what we've seen on the sidelines on game day. Do you have any thoughts about him and what he does bring to the table that's his own touch or his own fingerprint, so to speak?
Not 100% yet. I agree with you, Paul. And that was part of the the idea when I went into this coaching search with the idea of what the Giants were looking for, the big question about McAdoo, from my perspective, is we didn't have the opportunity as a beat or as people who cover him on a regular basis, you guys included, to actually have an opportunity to sit down with him and get to know him, you know, what are his philosophies, yeah, that kind of thing. And I think part of what McAdoo brought last week was, you know, look, I am who I am, and you're going to see who I am, even if you haven't seen who I have been the last 2 years. And I think that as much as that is, I always wondered how much of it was Ben McAdoo not wanting to reveal his complete personality because he was coming into a situation where we all know Tom Coughlin. Tom Coughlin doesn't want his assistants out in the media talking to the media, revealing their personality. You know, the Ben McAdoo we've seen the last 2 years was the perfect Tom Coughlin assistant coach and coordinator. It was the ask Ben a question, Ben's answer was, that's a question for Tom. And I think that's kind of where we're at with McAdoo. And just a little break, the breakout session we had after his introductory press conference, I almost got the sense that, you know, in addition to all the questions about his suit and everything about being ready for this opportunity, I almost got the sense that, you know, here was a guy who looks in the mirror now and sees himself as head coach, and we may start seeing a little bit more of his personality, about his philosophy. Now, I'm not saying that he's going to all of a sudden be a guy who's creating back pages with his words, but I do get the sense that we're going to see more of who he is. But up until now, I completely agree with you. I really don't have a sense other than he's a guy who works hard, wants to teach players. Players I've talked to say he commands the room. At this point, it really is an open book, and it's a clean slate for what Ben McAdoo becomes as the Giants head coach.
You know, ironically, Art, he did list his four, you know, tenets of a football team that he would like, and quite frankly, it sounded like a lot of the things we had heard from Tom Coughlin over the last 12 years in terms of discipline, being a tough team, putting good stuff on tape, and what's on tape being your identity, having people that play with good character, very similar to what Tom said off the door, going out the door about winning, but winning the right way. And that was the same type of stuff that I think we heard from Ben McAdoo in terms of carrying on what, you know, not only what Tom Coughlin did here, but also what is really the Giants' way in, you know, keeping that blue-collar, it's all about football type of approach.
Yeah, and let's be honest, guys. I mean, when Tom Coughlin came here as a coach, they wanted a culture change. You know, the Giants were looking for a culture change. You know, the end of the days of the Fossil era, there were a lot of questions about, you know, where this team had gone, where they were, what they were going to do going forward, Giants pride. You know, so when Tom Coughlin came in, that was the culture change. It was restore the pride, you know, all the injury stuff that Coughlin talked about. But I think now, you know, as much as John Mara and Steve Tisch didn't shut the door on Tom Coughlin and say, no, Tom, you can't resign, we need you here, you need to stay, I also don't think that they were booting him out the door either. And his philosophy, I don't think that the Giants want to veer too far away from what Coughlin established during his tenure. So I do think that Ben McAdoo, what he represents as far as that goes, I think it's probably one of the reasons why he's the head coach, is that he's not a complete culture change from what the Giants wanted. You know, sure, they want to get rid of the losing of the last 3 years, but I don't think they those basic tenets of Giant football, I think they want McAdoo to kind of inherit that and to further that from what has already been established under Tom Coughlin.
All right, Art, I got to get to the roster now because there are two huge question marks as we speak. You got to figure out what's going on with JPP on the defensive side of the ball. He is a dynamic player, or at least had been in the past, coming off of the hand injury. Now he had hand surgery yesterday. He is a free agent. You don't know exactly what his future holds. What is your expectations for him? And then part B to the question on the other side, Victor Cruz, a guy I know you have grown up covering for years and years and years since his days at Patterson. What is the future for Victor Cruz, who is under contract and has now been out for the better part of a season and a half?
Well, the JPP thing first, it's interesting to me, and obviously there have been reports and nothing from the Giants as of yet. As you guys noted, Ben McAdoo saying everything is fluid with his coaching staff. But if Robert Nunn is not back as defensive line coach, that was a huge conduit for Jason Pierre-Paul and the Giants. And I'm not saying that JPP doesn't have a relationship with Steve Spagnuolo, who we expect to be back as defensive coordinator, or Giants ownership, or Jerry Reese, or even Ben McAdoo. But Robert Nunn was a big, big part of Jason Pierre-Paul's connection here when he was gone. So that first and foremost, when I heard that Nunn was gone, that to me clouds the JPP situation even more so. And look, I think it's a wait-and-see kind of thing. The Giants know what JPP can and can't do better than anybody right now because they had him in the building. Maybe not as long as they wanted him in the building since his injury July 4th, but they had him in the building. They know what he can do. They have him here. They liked his attitude, the way JPP prepared and led in the locker room or in the classroom really, really, I think, helped his situation here. But, John Mara made the point. That it's going to come down to money, and it's going to be a money situation. And the Jerry Reese front office has shown no qualms and no fear of staring at a guy across the table, saying, this is what you're worth, this is what we're willing to pay you, and if you think you can get elsewhere, get more out of the situation, I will shake your hand and wish you well. We saw it with Justin Tuck. We saw it with Antrell Roll. And I think Jason Pierre-Paul falls in line with that because not only does JPP fit a need for the Giants, that position needs to improve. And to me, you cannot count on JPP to be your number one pass rushing threat going forward on his defense. So where he falls in line with the financial scale, I'm just not sure. But that would be my answer for the JPP situation. As far as Victor Cruz, look, it's a different story to me. Cruz is going to have to take some sort of pay cut to stay here because the Giants, to me, can't afford to pay that number to a guy who hasn't played in 2 years. And I think Victor knows that. I think he knows that it's not an insult to who he is to ask him to restructure his contract. I think it's a reality based on what he's been able to do physically. And with Ben McAdoo here, I do think Giants ownership respects how hard Cruz worked to get back. I think they all view it as unfortunate. But I would think right now, if you asked me to say which guy would be back, I'd say Cruz would be back, and I would say JPP might be elsewhere based on what he might be able to stir up on the open market. But that pass rushing need, we all know, is a huge, huge factor. That's got to be one of the top priorities, if not the top priority, for the Giants to figure out between now, free agency, and draft time.
All right, one other thing for me on free agency, very quickly. The Giants have a lot of cap space. We'll see what the exact number is once they set the cap and all that sort of stuff. And I think a lot of fans are looking forward to free agency to fill a lot of these holes that plagued this Giants roster this year. However, I thought it was interesting on Friday, both John Mara and Ben McAdoo, and I think Jerry Reese might have as well, I don't quite recall, made the point that the way you build a football team is through the draft. And free agency can help, it can be a part of it, but you want to build your roster through the draft. How aggressive do you think the Giants are going to be in free agency this year? Will it be a departure from what we've seen in the past? Are they going to go out there and nab two or three monster guys? Are they going to spread it around? How do you see the Giants' free agency strategy in this very early stage? You understand we're still about 2 months away from it actually getting going here. But how do you see the Giants approaching that any differently than they have in years past?
Well, I think they'll – here's the thing. I think they'll be aggressive in areas of need in which they believe the value matches the money that they're going to throw. You know, they were very aggressive after Devin McCourty last year.
Yep.
They were aggressive. They went to the top of the market, they threw their money at McCourty, and they lost out to the Patriots. They knew going in that if things were close to being equal, McCourty was likely going to go back to New England. But they were aggressive. After McCourty, they were not aggressive on the safety market because they looked at the safety market and they didn't feel as though there was anyone out there that deserved their aggression. Was it a mistake in hindsight? I'm not sure. You know, you see Ron Parker, the way he played in Kansas City this year. You know, he was a guy who I would have liked to bring in here. You know, so to me, I think the difference between being aggressive and just throwing money around and being smart and aggressive at the top of each position that you need, I think the Giants have more flexibility than they've had in the past. And I think that's a big issue here. But there are a lot of holes to fill, you know, and I think, you know, anyone who's expecting the Giants to go out and bring the top offensive lineman on the market in and to bring the top safety and go get two linebackers and a defensive end, that's not going to happen just in one fell swoop. And I think that's what I took from what they were talking about building in the draft. That being said, when you don't build in the draft properly from 2010, 2011, and 2012, you are now in a position where you're going to have to spend more in free agency than you would like because you don't have those players to fill out the base of your foundation and your roster. So I think they'll be aggressive. I don't think all of a sudden John Mara is going to be throwing money around at everybody and Jerry Reese is going to say, you know what, we've got money, let's go spend it, because that's not necessarily how they believe to build a team. But they also can't sit here and say, well, we're just going to wait for the draft, because if they're going to wait for the draft, then they're going to need at least one or two more cycles to truly fill out the rest of their roster and be competitive.
Great stuff, Art. Thank you.
Thank you, Art. Appreciate the time, my friend. And hopefully we'll hear something about this coaching staff by the end of the week.
Sounds great, guys. Thanks again. Appreciate
That's
it.
Art Stapleton from The Record. Good friend of the program. We appreciate him giving us the time to join us today. Great information as always, and we'll keep up with Art over the course of the year. Paul, you have some nice quotes or at least some information from Ben McAdoo's appearance on SiriusXM NFL Radio.
Yeah.
What do you got for us?
He has mentioned a couple of things here. Being quoted by Sirius, I guess he did a guest spot with them this morning. He says, we will start to review all 16 games this past year on Wednesday and evaluate everything, just the beginning. Also mentioning here, and this is, I think, very interesting, he says, I will be involved in the offense and we will have a good foundation down after 2 years, or we have a good foundation. Not sure if I will call plays.
Are you surprised by that?
A little bit.
He said on Friday he wasn't sure what he would do based on who else was on the staff.
Right, right. But I'm guessing he would probably lean towards doing it only because he has been so successful with Eli in doing it for 2 years.
But
however, it's a big, big piece of meat to bite off.
There are not many head coaches out there anymore that also call plays. I mean, you're down to Chip Kelly. You're down to Andy Reid.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty much about it, no?
There's no more than five or six, let's put it that way.
Sean Payton doesn't call plays.
No.
I know McCarthy took it back over, but
he
didn't to start
the
year.
See, my whole thought on this was, and it's strictly a guess, is that he probably would start at the beginning of trying to call some of them.
Adam Gase, by the way, will call plays in Miami.
Is he?
I believe he said he would, yes.
Yeah. I kind of thought that maybe if I had a guess, I'd say that he would start at the beginning of doing it and then would probably back off if he felt like it was too much. That would have been my guess. But anyway, that's some of the stuff that apparently he's mentioned to the Sirius people this morning.
A couple other quotes. I struggled with the emotions of Tom Coughlin stepping down, but I had to do my best in the interview process. Also, working with a guy like Eli Manning is what makes coaching fun, and a quarterback like that wants to attack every day. So there you go, folks. That's what you got. Ben McAdoo, the new Giants head coach, and they're trying to get this staff together. And they'll hope to, you know, hopefully we'll know exactly who's going to be on the staff by, you know, the end of the week, next week, whatever the case might be. I'm sure they're trying to get these guys in here as quickly as possible, simply because there's a lot of work to do. And you got to make sure you get these guys in the building to start getting to work on next year. One other thing to note, for Giant fans, since the Giants do have a new head coach this year, they can bring their players back for the offseason program a little earlier than other teams. I believe it's a week, right?
I think it's only a week. It's not much, but it's something.
It's one less week for you not to have players in the building. I figured you'd be all psyched. You live for this stuff, Tatino. I figured you'd be all about that.
I do. But you know, honestly, at this moment, not even knowing how many guys or how much churn there's going to be on this roster, it's a very curious time for me more than it is anything else.
It is. I thought it was an interesting point, and I had not made that computation myself until Art brought it up. The whole Robert Nunn JPP thing I thought was interesting.
Well, I mean, ultimately, I think it's going to come down to price, as John Mara himself said.
It always does, though.
What is the number component going to be here? I insist what I said at the beginning of the year, and I will continue to insist this entire offseason. JPP is not, in my view, the Pro Bowl player that he used to be. But I still believe he is a functional pass rusher in the National Football League. He may or may not be a full-time every down player, depending upon what that hand surgery does for his grip, because it is clear he himself said, I'm watching the tape and I'm missing tackles. Guys are getting away from me. Well, if I'm an offensive coordinator, I'm going to run to the outside edge toward that hand every chance I get, because I know he's not going to be able to make that grip.
Especially since that's his outside hand, since he plays left end now because of the stance. I agree. Right. I have a couple questions for you before we get to the calls at 201-939-4513. And Derek, Joe, BW will get you in just a second, I promise. But this goes to what Art was talking about in terms of the Giants' free agent strategy, Paul.
And there's about 30 of them, by the way, on this roster who are free agents now.
Correct. Will the Giants be involved in a player in the same way they were involved in Devin McCourty last year? In other words, will they target the top guy at a position and try to go over the top? And some of the stories last year were actually that the Giants offered more money than New England, but he decided to go back to the Patriots. Will the Giants be in on a player the same way they were in on McCourty last year? I'm not going to say what position, not going to say offense, defense, but just a player the way they were in on McCourty last year.
I do believe that they will have one or two guys in the center of their dartboard who they will make a concerted effort to target. Yes, I do.
Now, this is the tricky one.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think there'll be one for sure. With all the potential cap money that could be there, might they try to do that with two players?
Yeah.
Bring in two top players at their position groups.
I wouldn't be surprised if it is two guys.
Will they both be on defense?
Oh, I think they are.
Me and you are on the same page, I think. I don't like that. Not at all. I agree, though. And I think one will probably be
a pass
in the
rusher.
Front seven and be a pass rusher. I think the other one will probably be in the back four, whether it's a second corner or safety. And you know what? I would not be surprised if a linebacker, a more prominent starting linebacker, was brought in at some point as well.
As I have said to people, yourself, Lance, Anita, all the folks on this show many times before.
You're calling Lance a person now? That's generous.
He's an Oompa Loompa. They're people.
Wow. See, I see Lance as more of like a broadcasting automaton.
Okay.
It's almost like he's been like bred for it, and that's kind of all he can do.
In any event.
Anyway, go ahead.
As I've said to all of our folks before on the crew, and I believe this, to even start thinking about free agency without knowing who's going to be in that final pool is a little premature.
Well, that's why I'm not asking for players.
Right. But I will tell you this. I do think strategically they will go along the lines of what you thought. I have guys already in my mind in the center of that dartboard, but I don't know what's going to happen to them, and for that reason, I'm not going to give those names now.
Well, and
but I've already got guys on my dartboard.
And that's the trick. You know, when you have guys in their prime years, which are the guys you would be offering that type of money to? You know, you don't want to offer guys that type of big money who are 31 or 32. You want to go after the 26 or 27-year-olds that are coming off their rookie contract.
If you can get them.
Those are the guys you're going to want to try to go after. Here's the trick. Those guys can often be franchise tagged by teams if they're that good.
No doubt.
And if they're that good in that realm, they could get re-signed long-term by those teams. So, you're right. It's a matter of who's out there. The question is, once you maybe start getting some guys closer to 30, maybe not quite 30, but maybe 29 or so, and maybe they get released for financial reasons, how much do you go after those guys? And I think there might be a couple down the road that might be available in that range. I won't mention any names. Paul's getting excited.
I have a 30-year-old
guy. I know you do. 939-4513. But as we get closer, we can start talking about that sort of
stuff. We're not doing it now.
As guys start cleaning out their roster. Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. It's simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings, fantasy sports, free to play. Derek, Atlanta, go ahead.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Long time no speak, Derek. How are you?
I want to comment off of what you just said, though. There, you know, I think every week now we're starting to play GMs ourselves and by playing DraftKings. And you know, the part, as you actually put your lineups in, it's kind of go what your free agency thing is. You might want to pick up a Antonio Brown, but when you look at that price, you're like, okay, I might be able to take a, you know, Travis Benjamin, or I might want to take someone else. So to Giants strategy, I think the Giants have so many holes right now, and I think they have some injury history. I think it's probably better for them for the next couple of years is to take volume over one or two big targets, because I don't think one or two is going to solve the issue.
But, Derek, at the same time, Derek, very quickly, remember, what the one thing Tom Coughlin said all year round was at the end of games, you need somebody to go above the X's and O's and make a play to get a stop at the end of these games. So you have to find a difference maker somewhere, because it's the difference makers generally that make those types of plays.
I would think that would be Eli Manning learning to be better in the red zone.
But you got to be. You got to do it on defense, though, too, Derek. You got to do it on defense, too.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But the reason why I call is, like, how important do you think continuity is? Because I hear that word a lot by the ownership. It looked like we went with total continuity instead of maybe the best players, best coaches.
I don't think you're going with total continuity, Derek. I mean, we'll see what this staff looks like. But if, you know, some of the reports are to believe, you're looking at some level of turnover. We'll see if that's true or not. I mean, you obviously changed the head coach. They didn't say that they had finished all their conversations about how they're going to evaluate personnel. They said that's something they would have talked about in the offseason. So I don't think you have total continuity. As to your other question, I think continuity is important when you think you do things the right way. So when it comes to, you know, culture, I like the idea of there being continuity, because I really like the culture that was established under Tom Coughlin. I think that's a good thing. But when you look at some of the things that haven't gone so well the last 10 years or, you know, 5 years, whatever you want to look at, you know, you want to move away from some things. And I think that's what Ben McAdoo talked about when he got hired. You see the things you like, you keep doing those. And then you look at the things that maybe you're not doing so well. And those are the areas that you make changes in.
Yeah. The wide receiver coach that we just brought in from San Francisco. San Francisco doesn't strike me as being a big wide receiver type guy. Is this a relationship thing? I mean, I don't.
Well, I want to stress first, Derek, that
you worked with before.
Well, Derek, I want to stress first that the Giants have not announced any new additions to the coaching staff. So I really can't say too much about these guys. I saw the stories you did, and from what I understand, there isn't much of a personal connection from what I've seen.
Okay. And last, before I leave, I'm just going to say, I think we'll notice how things are going to work out next year based on who is getting signed back from last year's roster. And I hope, you know, I keep waffling on this, but I hope Victor Cruz does make it back. I know it'll be a pay cut, but from being a person from Patterson, you know, I'm hoping he does find a way of making this roster next year. I'll talk to you guys later.
Thank you, Derek. I appreciate the call, and I agree. I think if I had to, you know, head down to AC and place a bet, I think I would bet that Victor would be here next year.
Yeah, I'm inclined to go that way as well, although, again, without knowing the medical reports on that calf procedure.
Oh, yeah, who knows?
I mean, that's the thing. I'm going to be honest. One of the most curious things that I have to ask about this team right now, besides the coaching staff, which is certainly a question mark for me, what's going on with Victor Cruz's leg? Because since that procedure that he said he was having on the internet when he announced it at the end of November, first week of December.
It was right after the Patriots game.
Okay.
Right? It was the day after New England. So
yeah,
November
so right
16th.
By the, right around Thanksgiving.
November 16th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I have not seen or heard a word about Victor Cruz's condition since.
Nope. Me neither.
And I don't know.
Well, and I can tell you this. I spoke to Nat Burhey after the season. And again, I don't know if his procedure on his calf, because he also had surgery on that calf, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the surgery was the same. I don't know if the procedure was the same. I have no idea. He's pretty close. When I talked to him after the year, he said his rehab is still ongoing. But he said he's pretty darn close. So I don't know. But you're right. That's step one, Paul. You got to make sure Cruz is healthy. And then, again, everyone seems to be, you know, presupposing that there's going to be some type of, you know, figure out a way to take a contract cut, things like that. We don't know if that's going to happen. And if it does come down to that, you know, Victor's under no obligation to agree to that either. So that's something that he's going to have to work out with the team down the road if that's a path that they decide to go down, which no one has, you know, knows if that's the case quite yet.
I hope, for one, I hope that Victor Cruz is fine and that he can get on the field and play again. We all want that to happen.
The Giants don't have a second wide receiver on their contract right now besides Victor Cruz. He's the guy.
It's just...
And he would help Odell Beckham a lot.
You know what? You're a Knicks guy, so you'll appreciate the analogy. I remember when the Knicks had Bernard King and he was doing everything and that you could possibly imagine on a basketball court. In fact, Larry Bird still robbed his MVP that one year. And then they got Patrick Ewing. And it was going to be, wow, can't wait to see Patrick Ewing and Bernard King play together. And they barely did.
Yep.
Because
Bernard tore up his knee.
Bernard ripped his knee in Kansas City.
And Patrick, his first year, hurt his knee too.
And Patrick was banged up. And we never really got to see those two guys together on the floor at their best. And that really stunk. I felt like I was robbed as a Knicks fan.
See, I thought you were going to reference them adding Kiki Vandeweghe to the Patrick Ewing-led mix.
Okay.
Or maybe the addition of Antonio McDice to the Allen Houston-led mix.
Yes, yes.
No, not so much?
I'm not going there.
Adding Steve Francis to the backcourt with Stephon Marbury? The modern-day version of Walt Frazier and Earl the Pearl Monroe?
Yeah, that worked out real
well, didn't it?
No. Multi-million dollar backcourt that did absolutely zilch.
Oh, boy.
But the Bernard King-Patrick Ewing comparison right now is holding some water for me. And we're all hoping to see these two guys on the field at the same time, and we haven't really gotten to see it.
They played in one full game together, Atlanta.
Oh, man.
And that was it, I think. Game 5 of 2014.
Victor
got
hurt
in game 6,
they
right?
They played in maybe two full games together at most.
Well, okay, here's
at
the
most.
Well, let me look at the Victor Cruz game log, because I know Beckham missed the first four games.
It was game 6 in Philly. Game 6 in Philly is when Victor got hurt.
Correct.
So Beckham missed 4.
Right. So it'll be 1.5 games.
It was 1.5 games.
Right.
That's all we saw.
That's what I thought it was.
That's all we saw.
It was Atlanta, if I remember right. Yep. Game 5 against Atlanta and then half the game against Philly.
And I mean, I feel robbed. I feel cheated. I feel robbed. I feel ripped off.
Have you filed your complaint at the HR office?
And so I'm still holding on to, I need to see these guys playing on the field together.
Yeah,
I need to see that.
Well, I would like to see a situation where teams maybe aren't quite so comfortable putting a guy over the top on Beckham and maybe leaning a linebacker over the middle. Because whenever teams had to cover him one-on-one, did it go well for them?
No.
It did not.
No. No.
And so, that's why running the ball, by the way, late in the year was such a help. Not as easy to leave that safety deep if Rashad Jennings is running for 150 yards like he did the last game of the year.
So anyway. There is one of the other million-dollar questions around here right now. What is the status of Victor Cruz? And I certainly hope at some point in time we get to hear from either him or Coach McAdoo. And again, the usual calf procedure, and again, we don't know exactly what happened with Victor. You're talking about at least a 3-month rehab. And so that would still take him to the end of February, which would be the time that free agency is about to begin.
And remember, there isn't necessarily any sort of time limit on this. I mean, Victor Cruz is under contract.
That's true.
It's not like another team's going to come and swoop in and take him away.
Sooner they find out how he's doing, the better.
Absolutely. But the point is, he's on the roster. And
right
he's not going to go anywhere unless the Giants decide that's going to be the case.
Yeah.
201-939-4513. All right, we got 15 minutes. I got four calls. Let's get them all in. Joe in Pennsylvania is up next. Joe, how are you?
Hey, great to talk to you guys. Missed you this long weekend. Maybe I talk to McAdoo here or take this holiday away from you guys or something.
Well, hey, Joe, why are you trying to take days off away from me? We earned days off.
I'm
we worked every day
guys,
for like 5 months,
enjoy
man.
The show. That's what I want to say.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You guys. First, talking about McAdoo, the hiring, it's a great hiring, and I could see if I was the boss, Mara, you know, if I'm hiring somebody, especially like him, you know, the offense did great, you know what I mean, the last 2 years. You know, my only thing is when I'm hiring him, I look at him, you know, being a young guy, you know, do the players respect him and that, and he should see that around there, you know what I mean, and I guess he got the feeling that they do, and you hire the guy, you know. He seems great and young. It must be his day to be on the networks. He was on ESPN earlier, too, there. So another thing I said, I'd like to say, I've heard, has Coughlin been around, like, in the weight rooms and stuff? Have you guys run into him?
I know for a fact Tom was here late last week. Ben McAdoo mentioned that he was in the building, and I know he's gotten a couple workouts in. So I believe he has been in the building. Whether he's been in since Friday, I have no idea.
Well, it's just great to hear that he's around and that there maybe, I don't know if there was any hard feelings. There has to be some or so, but I was glad he didn't sign with the Eagles. I'm glad they didn't get Spagnuolo, and that I hear, you know what I mean, nothing's official, but that he's staying with the Giants, because when Andy Reid was coaching, I guess he was a disciple of Jimmy Johnson, and, you know, Andy Reid didn't know him. He was up at Green Bay, but he said when they played any of his teams, his defense is Jimmy Johnson. He really had a hard time with them, and that's why he hired him, and Spagnuolo was there. Spagnuolo led us in the Super Bowl, so he can prove that he can coach if you give him the players. So I'm very happy with that. And he was a head coach, so he can help out McAdoo there too. So now getting to let's see here, the draft and the players and stuff like that. I know we picked number 10. And signing players and that, like I said, Cruz, I think, and JPP. I think we got to sign these guys, but that with incentives if they can do it, because they have proven that they, you know, especially Cruz, that he's not available. And is Nix even younger than Cruz?
You know, I'm not sure what Hakeem Nix's age is. I believe him and Victor are about the same age, right, Paul?
Right.
I was going to say, isn't Nix 28?
Nix might be a younger than them, to be honest with you.
Do you think his, like, Nix's
drop 28.
Off is because of his legs, more or less?
Yes.
Well, it's, like I said, you really got to give Cruz incentives.
Cruz is 29, that's what I thought.
Yeah, I think you got to give him incentives. But when can we sign our players now? Why ain't we signing our punter and our kicker? You know, they did great, and they're both up. Can we sign them anytime?
Players that I'm not sure, you know, you can sign a guy to an extension, I think, pretty much anytime you want. But I think if a player is heading into some level of free agency or arbitration or an option year, I don't think you can move on that now. Can you, Paul?
I need to refresh.
I'm honestly not positive
before
about
before
it.
I start talking about that.
I'm not positive about it either. I agree.
Yeah. And well, I hope we get him signed, and I hope we can keep our specialty coach there, too. I think what's Quinn, his name is. Let's see, with Eli Manning, I have to compliment on him. You know, you look in the playoffs, you know, how we played against our offense, how great it played against Carolina, scoring them 30-some points. So if we get the defense going, that's for sure. But look at Eli's health compared to Roethlisberger and even the quarterback over in San Diego that was hired or came on at the same time. And you know, we can knock on wood that, you know what I mean, that Eli's, you know, health's been so good. And
yep.
The only other thing I have to say is, you know, he is turning 35, and I guess we have questions with Nassif, yet we just don't know if something would happen. And if something would come up, you think we could grab a younger quarterback yet this year or no?
You want another quarterback?
I said no, a young one in the draft.
No, I look, you're not going to go with three quarterbacks on the roster, Joe.
Thanks for the call, Joe. Appreciate it.
Thank you. You're not going to see that. So if you're only going to go with two, the mix they have right now, at least while Nassib is still under contract, is going to have to be the way it is. I want to just alert you, Joe, because I know you were asking about the age of McAdoo. I just put something up on Twitter because it's relevant to what you were saying. Giants have had 17 official head coaches in history. They had one guy who was a player coach, kind of a co-coach earlier in their 1920s, I believe. So 18, 17, depends what number you want to use. Coach McAdoo is the eighth such Giants head coach who is 38 years or younger.
Really?
But he is the youngest Giants head coach since Alex Webster, who was 38 years old in 1970. So, you know, I like to talk about the modern era, which to me starts with the 1956 championship when they beat the Bears. But you could certainly say since the merger, because that was another era of pro football. Things changed when the AFL and NFL merged. So if you want to go since the merger and use that as your breaking point of the modern era, Alex Webster was 38 when they hired him in 1970. They've hired all older head coaches since then. McAdoo, now 38, tying Webster.
And I want to, by the way, bring up something else that Joe mentioned, and that's Eli Manning. And you look at all these other quarterbacks, even Tom Brady missed a full year with an injury. Look how Peyton's broken down a little bit. Now, granted, he came out 5 or 6 years before Eli, and that's fine. But even the other guys from that class, Roethlisberger had the knee. Now he's got the shoulder. Romo's had the clavicle a couple times. I mean, Phillip Rivers had missed a year
Brees
with the ACL.
Was hurt.
Drew Brees had injury issues last year. This year he was a little bit healthier, though he had the plantar fascia late in the year. Those guys from Eli's era, I mean, almost to a man, they've all suffered some type of injury at some point. It's really amazing how healthy Eli Manning has been and has been able to stay on the field for every single meaningful snap the Giants have had since he came into the starting lineup in the middle of 2003.
And I don't want to find out what it's like without him in the lineup. However, I do believe right now, Ryan Nassib is best prepared at this time than any other time in his young career to fill in and play a game if necessary. And quite honestly, when you look at some of the other backups the Giants have had over the years, Jim Sorgi, Sage Rosenfels, David Carr, who I liked a lot, but outside of one good preseason, you know, he was off and on when he was here. I like David Carr. I like him as a person. I think he's a great guy, and he had that one really, really good preseason for the Giants. But other than that, he was always up and down, too, whenever he played. So I do think that Nassib has talent. He's young. He's eager. He looks like he's getting better and better. So I don't think they need to go after another quarterback this spring.
Agreed. BW, he's up next. BW, where are you calling from, pal?
The Boogie.
Oh, the Boogie down Bronx. What's up, B-Dub?
Yeah. So I wanted to comment on what y'all was talking about earlier about free agency.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I think if the Giants, like, you know, if they get, like, you know, like a top defensive lineman and, you know, somebody on the back end, I think that would be the best thing to have, to put yourself in the best position to win, you know, next year. Because now in the draft, you could really go best player available. And even though in the draft you would probably want to go, you know, a defensive player in the first round, if you, you know, get the players you need in free agency, you know, maybe you can grab somebody who could go, you know, along with Odell. You know, maybe not necessarily a wide receiver, but, you know, maybe another offensive lineman or something like that. Somewhere, you know, the team could be in a position to take the best player. But I also wanted to say, like, I'm also interested in how McAdoo is going to inspire the team, like, you know, get them geeked up for games and stuff. Like, because, you know, that was one of the things I really liked about Coughlin, the different ways he would use to motivate the team. Like, he'll bring in an Army veteran, or, you know, he'll bring in, like, a kid with cancer, or he showed them the Margarito Cotto fight, or, you know, he'll play a tape from Madden, you know, stuff like that. Because he really knew how to get his team psyched for games and put them in the best position possible mentally and to go out there and perform their best. So I'm curious of what McAdoo would be, like, you know, the kind of person he would be to inspire his team and stuff like that. But that's basically it.
All right, thanks for the call, BW.
Thank you, man.
I know to a man, his offensive players love the guy.
Yes.
And they volunteer that. You don't ask. They volunteer it.
And I would also say to you that he made mention when asked about the signage and the sayings that Coach Coughlin put up around the building. He made mention the other day that he does believe in the signs. He does believe in the phrases and the historical sayings. He didn't know if he was going to keep them all up. He said he was going to go through them. He was going to be selective and decide which ones he wanted to keep and maybe even add some new ones. So if you're worried about, you know, inspirational kinds of talks and kinds of references to the past, it looks like Coach McAdoo is going to stick with that.
By the way, you're going to like the draft this year. Have you done any draft work yet?
No.
A lot of trench guys on both sides of the ball.
Nice. Nice.
There's only a couple skill guys that are going to be first-round picks, maybe a couple wide receivers, a few quarterbacks, the running back from Ohio State. Not a ton of skill guys. You got a couple guys in the secondary that are interesting, but you have a lot of trench guys, both sides of the ball. I thought that got you excited. And here's one nugget from you to you. Senior Bowl hasn't happened yet. And this player has been talked about a little bit, but not quite out in front like the Jared Goffs and the Paxton Lynches and those guys have, the two of the quarterbacks. A lot of people think when all is said and done that Carson Wentz, the starting quarterback for North Dakota State, could be the first quarterback off the board.
I have heard of him. I have seen, I saw one game of his during the playoffs, the 1AA playoffs. Very impressive.
6'6", 230.
Now, whether or not he can make the transition to the next level remains to be seen, because that's mental.
Now, he's listed as a junior here. This must be an old page, but I believe he's a senior, because he's playing in the Senior Bowl. So, yeah. And
that's habitually a very strong 1AA program.
Oh, absolutely.
FCS. I'm sorry, folks. FCS program.
You're going to have Ralph Ventry call you up. He's going to rip you a new one, Paul.
Yeah, I know.
For messing that terminology up. All right, here we go. Two more callers. Leonard Maryland. Leonard, you got 2 minutes. What do you got, pal?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well.
Hey, maybe just a little follow-on to Joe's question. Maybe this would help a little bit. By my count, the Giants have 15 guys who are listed as exclusive rights free agents. Which means no one else can sign them. All the Giants have to do is make them an offer, and they automatically come back to the Giants.
That's correct.
And Wing the punter is on that list, along with Larry Donnell and Ty and Darkwa. Again, a total of 15 guys, and unless they're injured. And there are a couple of question marks on there. The safety, Bennett Jackson, who has had two surgeries, and Marcus Harris, the wide receiver, who's had two surgeries, fall into that category, but I'm not sure the Giants would be interested, given those injuries and bringing those folks back. And we've got 20 unrestricted free agents.
By my count,
sign them all before, if we're so inclined, before free agency starts, including Prince and JPP, we have first crack at them. I think March 4th is the date, and then anybody can indeed start negotiating with them. So that's a lot of guys who were on our roster last year and were on injured reserve who we've got access. I think right now there's about 81, 82 guys who you could say are on our roster. Now that'll change come free agency time because guys will sign. And
they have 31 free agents, okay? 13 offense, 14 defense, 4 special teams. It's 31 total. You are right that Wing and Donnell are restricted. Other than that, there are no significant guys who were part of a regular rotation who are restricted guys. Ty's an exclusive rights guy, so's Darkwa.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
I wanted to clarify, those are exclusive rights guys, which no one else, if we make them an offer, no one else
correct.
Can make them an offer.
Ty and Darkwa would be the two biggest names of the exclusives. That's correct.
Well, and is the punter on your list, too?
He's restricted, and so is Donnell.
Okay, they're exclusive rights.
No, they're restricted rights. There's a difference.
Oh, okay.
Restricted rights and exclusive rights.
But the
rights
bottom
are
line is that the Giants put a decent tender on both guys.
Well,
no team's going to give up a significant draft pick.
Basically, they're not going anywhere.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. I did not know that those guys were restricted rights. I thought they were exclusive rights as well.
All right, Len, finish up. What's your last point?
I'm sorry?
I said, Len, finish up. What's your last point? I have one more call. I got
to
squeeze it.
No, you just wanted to move on to something else? Try to help Joe out there
no problem.
Clarify what he was talking about. You know, the games this past weekend, I'm sure you guys watched, if not all of them, you watched most of them and most of the plays. One thing that struck me relative to the Giants, the speed on that field was unbelievable.
Which game?
All of them. The speed of those teams.
Except for Eddie Lacy running for 60 yards. There was not a lot of speed there.
Wow. Was
you
he
know,
chugging?
And,
oh, man,
you know,
he was
and
dying.
You compare him to the Giants, and, you know, here's you know, the linebacker from Carolina.
Oh, Keith Lee's. Oh, yeah,
three ACLs. And my guess, he's faster than any linebacker on the Giants.
You know what, though, Len? The best unit on the field still alive in the playoffs is the Denver Broncos defense.
Well, and
they play fast. They hit hard. They fundamentally are sound. Okay. They don't miss tackles.
And they have two free agent linebackers, by the way, and Brandon Marshall and Danny Trevathan.
That is a good unit.
Okay. And Von Miller,
let me sum up, and you guys go on to your last call. Here's my whole point. We got to get faster. You can say bigger and stronger. When I watched that speed this weekend, we can't compare. We don't compare. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Hey, thank you, Len.
Talk to you later.
I don't think anyone would argue more speed.
I remember after the 2007 season when the Giants won that Super Bowl in Arizona, their mission was get faster, get quicker, find more speed. That's been an everlasting mission here for a long time.
Final call. Richard's in Rhode Island. Richard, you're hitting cleanup today. What's going on, pal?
Hi, guys. First time caller, long time viewer.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you watching and listening. What do you got?
Love your show. Yeah, on Eli Manning, the previous caller, about his decision making. I mean, when you cut down to, you know, just about throwing a ball on the 1 yard line, you know, you can't run the ball. And, I mean, things happen, tip balls. I mean, I don't see how people can keep putting it on Eli Manning. I mean, at one point, you got to give up the guy. He's last 2 years. And, pretty productive, and at least four interceptions this year was tip balls from receivers dropping or tip.
Yeah, Richard, I don't think anybody in their right mind, Richard, is putting the failures of this season on Eli Manning.
No, I'm just saying the previous call saying he made poor decisions inside the red zone. That's what I was a little told.
Okay, what else you got, Richard?
Yeah. Well, no, I'm just a longtime Giant fan. Love the Giants. Go Giants.
All right, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Though I'm sure Eli would like to have a couple of those passes back. He had a couple of guys in his face kind of just chuck it up once or twice.
There were a few there that, that I'm sure he's not happy with. But for the most part, Eli played really good football this year.
Oh, absolutely. Two straight years now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. No question.
Quick take before we say goodbye in the weekend football games?
I'm rooting for Arizona. I'm not going to pull any punches.
What's up with the Panthers' second-half defense, by the way?
Yeah, right?
No, the whole last end of the season,
they blew a 28-point lead to the Giants, too.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. It's been going on for the last 3 or 4 weeks. I don't know what's going on with that. I agree. I'm paying for the Cardinals, and I think they dodged a bullet last week because that's as poorly as I've seen Carson Palmer play all year.
Yes.
He did not play a good game.
He was not really sharp, but I'm rooting for them because I'm a huge Larry Fitzgerald fan. Was when he came out of college, thought he'd be a superstar, and in fact, he has been.
Very good guy.
And a
model NFL player.
Oh, class out the wazoo. So, big Larry Fitzgerald fan, so rooting for the Cardinals for that reason, and I also like Bruce Arians, I'm not going to lie.
Well, here's the thing. I'm also a big Dave Gettleman fan.
I understand that,
the Panthers.
Too.
I know Giant fans have some issues with the Panthers based on what happened on the field that day. I get that, but I love Dave Gettleman.
I understand that, too. I am a Dave Gettleman fan as well. But when it comes to the players on the field, I like the Cardinals players. I think they're a classier bunch. And so I'm rooting for the Cardinals to win it all. I think they got a real good chance to beat Carolina because I don't think Carson Palmer's going to have another bad game.
I agree. And in the AFC, I think this is interesting. To me, Manning and Brady has come full circle here. Let me explain why I say that. I know we're going late here, guys, but I think this is interesting. So hopefully you stick around for it. When Brady came into the league and the Patriots would play the Colts, all right?
Yes.
Peyton Manning would have the Colts on his back trying to do everything. Tom Brady did what he was asked to do. But had really good players around them, especially on defense.
Okay, interesting.
Now we've gone to the end of their careers.
Yes.
And Peyton Manning, clearly not the player he used to be. Arm strength isn't there. But he's being carried and helped a little bit by his defense. The same way when Brady was a young quarterback, he was being helped out a lot by his defense. And generally, early in their careers, who got the best of those Patriot and Bronco matchups?
Yeah.
The Patriots.
Yeah.
Something tells me, I have a funny feeling, that we're looking at Peyton Manning in his final year in the NFL going to San Francisco with the chance to win the Super Bowl.
Wow.
What kind of story would that be? You don't think the NFL would sign up for that right now?
Oh.
Peyton Manning going out with a Super Bowl? Oh, my goodness, the ratings.
Without a doubt. And again, I like the Broncos defense. I like the way they're playing. They play a lot of old school style defense. Very fundamentally sound.
And there's some very classy guys on that defense too. DeMarcus Ware, I know Giant fans hate him because with the Cowboys. He's like Larry Fitzgerald.
Great respect for DeMarcus Ware. You know, hated to see him crush Eli when he used to do that, but
and he probably did that more than any other player in the league,
by the way. But great respect for him. So yeah, I'm with you, John.
Yeah.
I would very much I'd like to see Denver and Arizona. I am rooting for Arizona to win it all.
It'll be a fun game.
Yeah.
All right, there we go. Dotz is back next week. I'm back with you on Friday. It is on Thursday, rather. It's me and Lance on Thursday. Tomorrow it's Lance and Anita, and then Jeff Fiegel's and I'll take you home on Friday afternoon on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Thanks for hanging with us. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you next time, everybody. Have a good one.
All right, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Got it on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.